Hello and welcome to Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast, your number one podcast for healing the wound of maternal narcissism and stepping into your power. Today I'm welcoming a special guest. Dr. Omatma Simons is a double board certified naturopathic endocrinologist revolutionizing fertility care. After witnessing countless couples struggle with invasive treatments, she pioneered a functional approach that addresses root causes without drugs or financial strain. She's helped hundreds of medically hopeless couples conceive naturally. Featured across major networks as the leading holistic fertility expert, she's expanding her fertile system approach to help professionals create abundance without burnout. Okay, so welcome, Omatma. I am really happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Okay, so first of all, what I would love to start with is for you to tell us about what brought you to this work, to the fertility work.
Yeah, so I started in naturopathic medicine. So I was already a doctor at this point. I had been working with people for about 5 years, and I was married to this man at the time who wanted to start having children. And every time he would talk about babies, my uterus would scream, "No!" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, what's happening?" And I didn't have this intuition before getting married, but definitely as soon as we had started talking about it, all of my intuition, my body, just everything was like, no, this is not a good idea. And that got me looking into fertility, because the understanding that I gained in medical school was that our fertility declines at 35, drops off of a cliff at 35. So when I was going through this with him, I was like, oh my gosh, well, if fertility declines at 35, like, I really need to get on it. And I was in my early 30s at the time. I was like, if I am ever going to have a child, if I want to have children, then I need to figure out what's happening in our relationship. How do I move forward? And what can I do to preserve my fertility until I'm ready? Because it could potentially be, 10 years before I find someone and we're ready to have children and all of that. So it was kind of a weird path to getting into it. But as I started researching, I realized that at least what we were taught in medical school about the fertility decline was not based in science. It's based in records from early 1800s France that churches documented that women were not coming in to baptize their children after the age of 35. Okay. So when I realized that, I was like, okay, well, if that's not true, then what is? And what does the science say about it? And what can I do as a naturopathic doctor to preserve my fertility and just ensure that I'll be okay when I want to have children? So that was kind of my starting into it, not realizing that as I was doing this study, I also was in the age group of friends that were going through issues with fertility. So when I started talking about fertility, they were like, "Oh my God, you can help me." And before you know it, like, had all of these women coming for support around their fertility struggles, and realized, oh my gosh, this is a bigger problem than I realized. And there isn't a lot of support that women and couples are getting around their fertility. So I ended up in it by default, pretty much.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So for anyone listening in that actually are feeling, gosh, I'm having all these issues and I'm alone in this, you're not alone. Like, mm-hmm. as you're mentioning now, it's like, this is a problem that's way more widespread. There's a lot of people that are having this issue. And I find that I'm saying this to the audience, because this is what happens in parallel with having issues with a narcissistic mother or a mother that's unsafe and carrying that kind of burden that we carry, very often we feel alone. I have women coming to me all the time saying, I'm alone in this, there's no support. But as you're not alone with that, you're also not alone if you're experiencing some trouble with fertility and you need support. So,
Yeah, it's so true. Like, there's so many women and couples that are struggling with this, and I think that that number is going on a steady increase with male fertility on the decline. Female fertility, I don't think is necessarily, it's definitely getting more and more struggled. So we see that younger and younger women are having issues with fertility. And because fertility is such a private journey, a lot of times I feel like friends don't even know that, oh, my like really good friend is also struggling with the same thing, because we're not necessarily talking about it with each other.
of course, of course, that makes sense. And so, as you are observing this trend of more and more struggle on this topic, what are the main factors that you found that actually have an impact and that they are making this trend increase?
Yeah, I feel like we have kind of a couple of things that are happening at the same time. One is, of course, that couples are waiting till later to start having babies, right? So people are not starting their families as young as they used to, even 30 years ago. So we're seeing a new rise of that. But we are also seeing, and we can correlate that men, or like in young adulthood, so 18 to 25, we've been tracking, there are lots of studies tracking male fertility because it's easy and we have a way to count, and it's just like really simple to measure, right? So what the statistical data says is that male fertility is very much on a decline. Testosterone as well as sperm count and sperm quality. So I believe that the reason for a lot of that decline is the toxins in our environment. So I think that we are just being exposed to so many endocrine disruptors, which are basically these compounds that mimic estrogen, progesterone, testosterone in the body, and they are disrupting how our internal hormones function. So that is problematic. We can see it in men, but it's also equally problematic in women. And there's lots of studies that are also testing the impact of the same disruptors in women, what happens to our hormones, what happens to our cycles, and potentially fertility down the line.
And what I'm hearing with you saying that is like it kind of helps relieving that feeling of, oh, it must be me. There must be something wrong with me. That I do know men also can put that sort of burden on themselves, but definitely as women, the fertility is such a, you know, when we're going even looking into culturally and in ancestrally, like what we're carrying, it's like it's such a big deal, so that there can be a feeling of a shame, even of, oh, there's something wrong with me, I'm bad, and but it's not.
Absolutely.
There's actually external factors that, as you mentioned, contribute to that, and can be the cause.
And I think, and it sounds sometimes it's like a double-edged sword, right? Like sometimes we say, oh, well, it's external, but then that feels like, oh, well, I can't do anything about it. It's external, or it's internal, and then I'm putting all this like pressure and blame and shame upon myself because I can't have children. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, but what I want to make sure that people get is that these are most of the environmental things are things that we actually have control over. So we have the ability to shift the outcomes if we're just aware of them. So I think that that awareness is really, really important. And then I think the other piece is really just understanding that we could have symptoms that are pointing to fertility struggle years before fertility struggle happens. So, for example, let's say a 15-year-old with irregular menstrual cycles, her often the approach that a doctor is going to take with her is going to be, oh, your periods are irregular. You probably have PCOS. You need birth control. And you get put on birth control. And then 20 years down the line, when you're like, hey, I'm ready to have children, you get off of birth control and your periods are still irregular. So you actually had that sign very early on. But because of the way that the medical system is structured, because of the way that primarily the approach that we have to medicine is not necessarily finding the root cause, but we're saying, let's just fix the problem. And the fixing is often a band-aid that people don't realize, like, oh, this didn't actually change what my periods are like. It only put a band-aid over it so that I can't see the problem. And then when you take the band-aid off, you're like, oh my God, this has been festering for 20 years. Like, this is a problem. So we see a lot of those women that are on the flip side of it. So I don't necessarily see a lot of those young women that are struggling because they go to the OB or they go wherever, and people are not necessarily thinking that far out. But 15, 20 years down the line, they are going to end up potentially like seeing me or hearing me speak or whatever and be like, oh, what? Like, I didn't realize that this is a problem. And this is why I can't get pregnant. So it's unfortunate that I like birth control came with a lot of good. And I think the downside has been your like the loss of our ability to understand what's happening with our bodies and really addressing those things early in our young adulthood, so that we don't have to wait till we're trying to have babies to fix the problem, quote unquote.
Of course, of course. And so for everyone listening in, like if and we have like the age actually spans quite a bit in the listeners. So we have like a younger portion that can go, okay, like if you are at that point, you now know that that's just a band-aid. That's just masking the problem. It's like it changes the symptoms. So you don't see the symptoms anymore, but the underlying mechanism hasn't been addressed. I do use that the metaphor of it's like mopping the floor when you see a puddle on your floor and you keep mopping it, but you're not actually fixing the pipe that's been burst. So that's, but for the women so that are listening in and they're like, okay, yes, that's great information. Had I known it like 20 years ago, but now I am actually 40 and I am actually in this situation. So what can they do? What can they do to go and look into the actual root cause and what changes maybe in their lifestyle or things that they can implement to support their fertility?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we can definitely start with the environmental things, regardless of what age we are, right? So even if you're not trying to have babies today or tomorrow, it's okay. Start with the environmental stuff. It's gonna help you when you're ready. If you ever want to have children, it's fine. There's no pressure to have children, but you want to make sure that you prepare your body and your hormones are going to thank you for it. So the environmental changes we can all be making as soon as we learn this information. And I think that there are three changes that I say are relatively easy to make and are going to give us the most return on investment in terms of like making the effort to change all of this. The first is plastic, getting rid of plastic in our life, whether that plastic is your plastic water bottle that you drink out of, it's the plastic Tupperware that you store your food in, it's the Starbucks coffee cup or whatever your local cafe is. If you're going getting a to-go cup, they're lined with plastic. You're getting takeout food containers that you're like maybe you're getting a hot Chinese food or whatever, and it's going into these plastic containers or foam containers, that is going to all have a negative impact on your hormones. So plastic is the first one to get rid of, especially plastic that is touching hot, anything hot. That is going to have a bigger impact, but the cold things are also impactful. So water bottles, for example, are probably the worst on the list, to just kind of avoid altogether. And it's relatively easy to find a stainless steel water bottle or a glass water bottle, find glass containers to store your food in, just eliminating as much as you can. You don't have to go nuts, but eliminate what you can. And the more you can get rid of, the better. The second is going to be things called phthalates. And phthalates are going to be present in all things fragrance. So you're going to see them in your shampoos, your conditioners, your soaps, detergent, air fresheners around the house. Like anything that is making your environment or body smell good is going to have phthalates in it. Very, and it's kind of sneaky. Even some of the natural products, quote unquote, or the organic products will have on the list of ingredients, it will say natural fragrance. And anytime it says fragrance or perfume or perfume, those are all phthalates. So a lot of companies are getting away with it, because they can quote it into natural fragrance and then it sounds like it's natural, but it's not. And those are going to have a pretty harsh impact on hormones. And then the last one is probably the trickiest in the sense that it's present in a lot of different things. And that's called glyphosate. And a lot of plants are sprayed with this pesticide, herbicide to kill things. And like kill pests on food. So a lot of the food that is grown throughout the world, unfortunately, is sprayed with this glyphosate. What glyphosate does is kill the microbes in our body. And we have thousands and thousands of varieties of microbes that coexist with humans, and they are actually doing things that we need. So they're doing things like digest your food, absorb nutrients, get rid of estrogen. They're doing all kinds of things in our body. So getting rid of the bacteria or the microbiome in our system is not a good thing. It's extremely negative. So getting rid of the exposure to glyphosate is really helpful for our entire bodies. In addition to that, glyphosate is also sprayed on cotton. So cotton plants often have this spray of glyphosate. And cotton is the plant that we use to make feminine hygiene products. So pads and tampons made out of this cotton sprayed with glyphosate is going to go into our vaginal microbiome environment and kill the microbes there. So not only do we eat it, we consume it. We're getting it in wine and things like that. Beer, things like that are also going to kill that microbiome. But then for women, we have this additional like killing of the vaginal microbiome, which according to all of the latest research is one of the biggest reasons why people could potentially not be getting pregnant is there are these microbes that are supposed to be in our reproductive system that, if they are not present, is not good for fertility. Or you lose the good stuff and then the bad stuff starts growing, and the bad stuff is often anti-fertility. So the more we can do to like support the microbiome in our body, the better off we're going to be health-wise on all levels, but definitely for reproduction.
And what I'm hearing in all of that you shared is that this sounds actually like really important, regardless of wanting to have children or not. Like I have two kids. I'm done with having children. I'm actually at the end of that. But we have, and I'm happy to hear what you're sharing, because I'm like, there are three things that we've implemented for years in our own house, in our own family. I've done a herbalist course years ago, and so all of this stuff was actually spoken to from my teacher, and was like, yeah, we gotta eliminate the plastic. And it's like all of your hormonal system is gonna benefit regardless of what you're looking to do with regard to having children or not having children. Is like the balance that those hormones are essential for a whole bunch of other stuff that is really, really important in your everyday
Absolutely.
life. So sorry, go
And if
ahead.
I could just add, almost all of the same toxins that affect our fertility are also going to be carcinogenic. So the same toxins are cancer causing, essentially. And the more we can avoid them, the more preventatively we can live. So, again, to the point of like, this is not just for people that are trying to conceive, it's really across the board. We just have to make the effort to change it.
And it also works, and I'm checking in with you. Am I correct in saying that it works both for men and women? So like, because I know my husband has been looking in testosterone levels, and he was actually one that he bought me a whole bunch of glass Tupperware. He was like, we're ditching all the plastic ones, and these I've bought you the new ones. This is what we're gonna use from now on. And that was actually for his own testosterone level. So that all of this is gonna also impact, in a good way, male fertility.
Absolutely. It is the presence of estrogen in the male system, which basically the plastic and the phthalates, both of them mimic estrogen. So the presence of the estrogens in the male body give the signal back to the brain to stop making testosterone. So it's like a it's really bad for the guys, probably more so than the women. Like women, we can handle it, and we have, if our microbiome is good, we can detox it a little bit better. But for men, it's very detrimental.
And we see all this. I do my eldest daughter is a teenager, and we've obviously spoken to this, but like with friends and things, and like massive amounts of deodorants being used constantly, and body perfumes and all of that, as you mentioned, those fragrances are actually really not helpful. Can we give the listeners some alternatives? Because I'm sure everyone's listening and is going, yes, but I don't want to go around smelling bad. And so, yes, for the plastic, we can change it into like glass containers, stainless steel containers, and all of that. Have you any possible
Alternative.
alternatives for like, so all these fragrances that we use in the house, for example, or on our bodies?
I have alternatives for everything. So, I have found that essential oils are really nice to like fragrance the home. And what we've done is there is an essential oil dispenser, because even the dispensers are plastic, which I'm like, how does this help? So I found this dispenser that basically is an essential oil, like the bottle of the essential oil just screws into the dispenser. So then it's glass. The oils are already in glass. You just screw it in, and then it dispenses fresh essential oils without any dilution. And it lasts because it's just so potent. So we started using that around the house so that we don't have to do the plastic thing. And then we have the best deodorant. I've tried a lot of them. The best deodorant, there's probably two. There's a company called Wellness, with a E at the end, Wellness-y. That deodorant is pretty good, and it's like a charcoal deodorant. It doesn't have any smell. And then the other one that I really have loved is called Each and Every. And it, like, I love it. It smells so good. It's like rose essential oil, sandalwood, something or other. It's good. And it works. Like, the problem with deodorants, especially the natural ones, are like, well, they didn't actually work, so you still stink, which is not fun. So those two, in my opinion, work really well. And then essentially everything else we have fragrance free. So if you want to smell good, you're better off just getting like whatever your favorite fragrance is, get the essential oil of it. Right, you can get like cinnamon essential oil or vanilla or rose, whatever you want to smell like that day. You can dab a couple of drops of essential oil, and it does. It's not going to last as long as perfume, but it's going to last long enough for you to feel like, oh, I smell good, and then it will fade over time, right? And perfumes generally do that as well, but. And there's some ways that you can make it like you can make it last. I have not tried this yet, but there are a couple of companies that are doing a fully natural fragrance essential oil perfumes. So there's a way to make those essential oils last and stay on you. And then the whole science of like blending oils together to smell good. So these companies are doing amazing things, and I think I have I will see if I've not added it. I have a book, an ebook that we can give the listeners. It's called The Diva's Detox Guide, and pretty much all of the things that I wanted as far as like how do I get a natural deodorant or natural makeup or natural whatever, we have been able to transfer and like have in a more the all of the natural versions I have listed in this ebook. So
Wonderful. Yes. So if you could send me the link, then I can put the link in the description of the episode for sure. And that's all really wonderful. And again, there's a lot of beautiful resources out there. Just to say, we are pretty much about 17 years chemical free in the household. So like everything is essential oils based, because essential oils are also natural anti-inflammatories, are antimicrobial, so they are actually gonna kill the bacteria that you don't want to have around the house. So there's so many different solutions that one can look into on that, and they're all very, very potent and valid. So that is wonderful. And the one thing that I wanted to add, if it's possible to get the essential oils organics, because otherwise we're going into the problem of the glyphosate again. And it's like, so that was sort of like the third point that you have made, this to be careful of the glyphosate. So so far, personally, our solution has been going as organic as possible. So I don't know if you have any other solutions or pointers on that.
I think organic is great. Avoiding alcohol, of course, is very, very helpful because those the grape plants and beer, whichever base, whatever it's based in, or like rye, barley, oats, whatever, it's going to have a lot of glyphosate potential. So avoiding those as much as possible is really helpful. And then avoiding the cotton sprayed stuff for our bodies is really beneficial. Cotton, as far as clothing, I'm a little bit more lenient. Like getting everything organic cotton to wear is potentially challenging, but you could, if e even just getting cotton fabrics is a good idea. And usually by like two or three washes, you're getting rid of most of the glyphosates. So that is less problematic. And And better, and we didn't talk about plastic clothing, which is a whole different thing.
Yes.
But all of the polyester, fake fabric, fast fashion is all plastic that you're wearing. And often, like yoga clothes that people are sweating in, that's all going to be problematic in terms of absorbing through the skin all of the plastic compounds. So not advisable in avoiding that as much as possible as well. So yeah, those are, you know, if you're eating mostly organic food, you are at a better advantage and you're doing pretty decent as far as avoiding all the chemical compounds that are sprayed. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, and as we said, this does so much for your overall health. I know from my part of the work. So when you're coming into this work, because my audience is about women that have had issues with their mothers and so mother wounds, a lot of trauma in the body. There can be a lot of obviously issues with anxiety, depression. There's so much that can happen within the system, feeling demotivated and all of that. And of course, we go into the trauma and all of those aspects because those are part of it and they do have an impact. But the chemicals in the environment and how you nourish your body is also going to have a big role in that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you can unpack all the trauma, but if you're nourishing your body with things that are unhelpful for your body, that's also going to have an impact. And as you mentioned, the microbiome, that also has a massive impact on how we're feeling and the mood and all of that. So again, yes, we're talking about fertility today, but this actually can really go into the overall health and well-being actually very much.
Absolutely. And I do think, like, while you were talking about trauma, I think we can really make the link of, yes, we have trauma, ancestral or created in our lives through relationships and things like that. So healing our nervous system is super important. And I find that's some of what we're also doing as far as fertility work, but also realizing that the environment has an equal impact on our nervous system. So when our bodies have to work harder, if you're exposed to tons of toxins and your body has to clear all of those toxins out, or you keep being in an environment that your body is not in alignment with, in the sense of, oh, I'm walking into a home that's like fragranced and it hits my nervous system first. Like, that's my sensory system to figure out, is my environment safe or not? And if that environment is consistently not safe in whatever way. We see this come up a lot with mold, for example. Mold is like this, like, subtle thing that's happening in the background. Most people don't realize it, but that mold is hitting your immune system, which is telling your nervous system you're not safe. So all of these triggers that we have in our environment, in the things that we're being exposed to, food or otherwise, are going to hit our nervous system with the feeling of unsafe. And anytime we are not in safety mode, we're in survival mode. And survival mode is the opposite of reproduction. So, really, like, shifting into safety and allowing our nervous system to be able to calm down and not feel like it's constantly under attack helps us get out of survival. So you create a safe environment for you as well as the baby by getting rid of these things in your environment that are contributing to your body not feeling safe in the world. And hence being able to heal some of that other trauma faster. So to me, like, it sounds so different. Body, mind, like it's very different things, but the link between the two is really our neuroendocrine system, our nervous system, and our endocrine system that are the communicators throughout the body that are signaling safe, not safe, safe, not safe, and is triggering the downstream responses in our environment, whether that's the immune system, whether that's our endocrine, like what hormones do we need to produce? What hormones do we need to cut off? Those are all things that are going to have an impact that we often don't even realize is happening, right? So, yeah. So, little micro traumas that I think are contributing in big ways to what's going on fertility-wise.
Yes, it makes a lot of sense because safety, it's like that was actually going to be my next question. It was like, how important do you feel safety is? And by safety, also safety within your relationship, safety within your family, your environment, but that safety that is also coming from the chemicals and all the different messages that our body receives. It's just as important, and all of that, especially when we're already, because I what I've learned in my studies on this is like the body is resilient. We actually have a resilience, so we have a capacity to deal with a certain amount of toxins. We have a capacity to deal with a certain amount of unsafety, and we can sort of like if our nervous system is actually flexible and can move through different layers, and we can deal with that. But what we're talking about here is like there is an overwhelm of the system that's constant, and we're coming already from a lot of traumatic experiences in our childhood. Because if you're listening to this podcast, you've been through a lot of trauma in your childhood, and I know that. So the more we can support the system by eliminating aspects that keep that unsafety and that hyper alert of the nervous system going all the time, the more we're gonna help the overall situation. And of course, fertility as a byproduct of that is gonna be supported.
I think that safety comes from all of the levels. It's like as much safety as we can establish in every part of our lives, the easier it's going to be to reproduce because it's really easy for people to think, oh, I'm good. I'm not stressed because my job is great and I like my job and I like my boss and things are going well and I make money and I'm good, right? Like that's when most people hear about stress, that's what they're thinking. But if we really expand this out, and that's why I've started talking more about safety rather than stress, because stress is this thing that we think we understand. What we don't understand is what all of those times that our body is, our body, mind, or spirit is feeling under attack. It is not safe. And anytime we're sending out this, like, oh, I have to fight in order to survive, we are putting out the trigger of let's shut off reproduction because reproduction is the one thing that we don't need if our body is in survival mode, nor can we do in nature. Like, if you were running from a lion, you would not be trying to get pregnant ever. That just wouldn't happen. And we are running from all of these lions multiple times throughout the day. And we have been for a long time. And then, like you said, to add to that, the childhood traumas and the things that we're like walking around with, or maybe you even had a beautiful childhood, but your trauma came through like your self-internalization that you needed to be a performer. You needed to do well in school. You needed to be like, getting all these straight A's and being a high achiever, essentially, as a way to get love, as a way to get the things that you wanted in your young childhood. That decision is still following you around because now, even though, I was just talking to a client last week who said, "Oh no, my stress is great. Like, I switch jobs, I work part-time, I like my boss, I am having a good time at work." And on the surface, that sounds wonderful. But you dig two layers deeper, and her endocrine system, like her body's not making any cortisol. And I'm looking at her reserves, which is cortisone, a different hormone, and she barely has any cortisone. So to me, I'm thinking, hey, this has been going on for a really long time. And we go right back to her childhood where she decided that she needs to be a high achiever, get all the straight A's, do all things, quote unquote, perfectly in order to get where she wanted to go. And she made that decision very, very young. So now we're not only looking at like what's happening in your present day life, but you've lived this way for 37 years for her. So that has had an impact on your system that even though you're not living that way anymore, even though you don't feel that stress on a day-to-day basis, your personality is such that you are still finding ways to put yourself into survival mode because that's just who you are. So she's like, "Oh my God, like I have to-do lists that I never finish." And it stresses me out because I am not done with everything that I set out to do that day. And I'm like, "Okay, and how many things are on this to-do list?" And she's like, "Oh, like 25." I'm like, "In a day? You can't do 25 things in a day." Right? So just having a different perspective and a different approach to how we think about things in our life, and realizing that if we created these patterns early on, we're going to have to shift those patterns in order to get to optimal fertility, which is basically this place of I feel safe in my body and I am open to receiving a baby and reproducing.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And it is what I find in my work all the time too. It's like, oh, there, you're back. Okay, so yeah, it is that personas that we take on, those coping mechanisms, strategies that we learn earlier on in childhood that remain even. And the body keeps it all in. So even if we're changing certain thing and rationally we feel we've made changes, but it's still in the blueprint until we get to those layers. As you mentioned, we go deeper a couple of layers and we start finding actually the root cause. And that can actually bring a lot of safety in the system and really bring back the balance. And the hormones respond to that. When we can bring that safety in. So what we're nearly coming towards the end. What is it that you can say, can share with women to, in all of this, go back to feel empowered in a situation that, and I know we did give them a lot of like little specific things, but I don't know if there's anything that you can add to that. Just in a situation that can feel very out of control, can feel like a lonely place to be.
So I would say there are three tools that I think we should all have in our back pocket. One is, let's start with the easiest one. The first one I'll say is optimizing our sleep. So often what we're doing is, oh, I get 8 hours of sleep every night, right? And I hear this over and over again. At first, realizing 8 hours might not be enough. So, especially if we have been in a depleted, stressed survival state for 20 to 40 years, we're at a place where we're going to need more time to allow our nervous system to recuperate. So, sleeping is super important. Second, as I talk about sleep, second, it is essential to realize that the quality of the sleep will make a difference. And then the third part of sleep is that waking up and going to bed at the same time every single day will help create a sense of safety in the body. So when we talk about like what are tools that are in my control, how do I help support safety? You can do the environment things. And the second thing on my list would be do the sleep things that support safety. And your body knowing when it's going to wake up and when it's going to go to bed every single night. And you can even add to that the stability of food. So scheduling when your meals are and doing your best to like stick to those meal times helps create a sense of safety through the things that you have control over. So it sounds like super controlling, but once you start doing it, you're like, oh, this is actually really easy. It's like my bedtime, my wake time, bedtime, wake time. And don't do those. I think a lot of people are used to, oh, I'm going to catch up on my sleep on the weekend, right? I'm going to get extra hours on the weekend. And that's great, except it's not, right? Like you didn't help support that safety cycle by the sleep wake times. So that is really, really important. It also helps increase reproductive hormones by 40%. So just doing that one tool helps to improve your reproductive hormones by 40%. The second tool that I like to use a lot is called body scanning. And body scanning is sort of like meditation, but way simpler. And all you're doing is, I think the study is 10 minutes a day. So you're just scanning your body top to bottom, bottom to top. Just go back and forth for 10 minutes. And all you're doing is observing. You're noticing sensations and you're like, oh, my back hurts a little bit. And then you're scanning through. And by the time you come back to your back, you're like, oh, that doesn't hurt anymore. Keep scanning, right? Like you're just scanning. That's it. And you can like, I kind of pretend that I have like a little handheld X-ray machine that I can like see into my body while I'm scanning to make it simple. So that's the second tool that improves hormones by 23% and lower stress. So another tool. And then the last one is kind of a funny one because we don't often think about it, but one of the main hormones in the body that supports safety is called oxytocin. It's my absolute favorite hormone. So things that support oxytocin will actually increase the sense of safety. So for women, one of the easiest things, and we forget it a lot, is we can actually help support and nourish safety within a group of women by just communing as women. So having women's circles that you're part of, or you have a group of friends that you like share a meal with once a week, that's a really good sense of safety. And you don't necessarily even have to talk or tell them your problems or all of this like thing, like keep it positive. But that circle of women coming together weekly, monthly, whatever you can manage to do is going to help increase oxytocin production, which is going to help support safety. So those are some things that I think are easy to do. They're essentially free. And I feel like anyone can do them, right? Like you can create a schedule. You can do 10 minutes a day. I don't care how busy you are. You can scan your body for 10 minutes a day. and you can find some girlfriends to hang out with. So that's the baseline for supporting safety and our nervous system in the world that we live in.
That sounds really amazing. So it's like finding that routine, get giving a sense of safety through routine, which is also something that in childhood a lot of the time we didn't have, because when we're coming from backgrounds of childhood that wasn't safe, routine was either something imposed and so that we resist, or it was just completely lacking altogether, and so there is that kind of baggage. And then the body scan and community, like oxytocin is the hug hormone. So like whether it's an actual hug, I do say to the women in our communities, like you can actually create that sense of being hugged by creating that blanket of love around yourself. You can do it in community with others. There's so many ways to do that. So that sounds like absolutely wonderful. A wonderful way to bring it to a close with something that's actually very practical and very easy to implement. Is there anything else that you feel like you want to add before we close? Of course, I'm going to have, if anyone wants to be in contact with you, there's going to be all your links in the description. Of course, that link that you said about that little guide thing,
The guide,
if you can share that
we'll
with me,
include
I will put
that.
that there. So if there's anything else you want to add before we close.
No, I think this was great. I think that just like putting to work some of the tools that we've talked about, shifting the environment a little bit, like it sounds like really simple things, but simple is better than complicated. Simple is better than taking a billion supplements that you don't know whether they're going to help or not. Like these are things that you can do that are, in my opinion, the most research backed to support fertility and reproduction. So, yeah, I think using the tools and making it like simple on yourself and like taking away all the complexity and, oh, I have to see this doctor and I have to go do this hormone thing and I have to do this and that. Like, keep it simple. The more simple you keep this, the more easeful your journey can be.
Wonderful. Yes, that's I couldn't agree more with that. Simple yet with high impact, because that's what's going to happen. So, Amatma, thank you so much for this time and for the wisdom that you've shared. And yes, if anyone wants to contact you, the links are going to be in the description. And yeah, so it was an absolute honor and pleasure to meet you. And don't go away. I'm gonna just stop the recording and say goodbye to you properly. And for everyone else, thanks so much for listening to this conversation. And yes, have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye for now.